In this episode, I sit down with Christine Wren. We talk about saving the planet with photography. This is TWIP. All right, folks, I'm here with Christine Wren. We're going to be talking about saving the planet through photography and some ways that she's using her superpowers to help conserve the world's oceans and other things. Christine, welcome to This Week in Photo. How's it going?
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. It's going great.
Yeah, this is exciting, right? I mean, so truth be told, I know you and I were talking in this sort of green room before I started the interview in earnest, and I revealed to you that I'm a nerd, you know, as if the This Week in Photo audience doesn't already know that. But most of them don't know that when I was a kid, you know how when you're a kid, you're like, this is what I want to be. I want to be a fireman. I want to be this. I want to be that. One of my that's was oceanographer. I wanted to be
I totally
want to be an oceanographer. And here's why. Because I don't know if you're old enough to remember Jacques Cousteau. You remember Jacques Cousteau?
Of course. Right. With the red hat.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. And I was like, and I had read some book. This is me at like 11 or 12 or something. And I had read some book that said there was more life in the ocean undiscovered than obviously, you know, it's closer to us and undiscovered than outer space and all that stuff. I'm like, why not just go down there? You know, let's go look around and find out aliens. And then I started reading these science fiction books that were hypothesizing that aliens, if they were going to land on Earth, which 70% water, probably be in the water. So I'm like, there are aliens in there. I'm going in there. That's what I wanted. So, yeah. So that's why I was really interested to chat with you, because you have a background in ocean conservationism and you're applying your photography to that. So tell me a little bit about that background, the ocean conservationist side of Christine Wren.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, also just to kind of follow up on your, you know, early desires to be an oceanographer. I mean, I also grew up as a complete science fiction and fantasy nerd. You know, I have like two cousins and brothers, and that like video game, sci-fi, that is just what I was around and became really like a part of my identity. And when you start thinking about this whole other, like a planet that's 70% water, and there's this whole other, like, you know, unknown world in the world you're living in, right, that made me curious about the ocean from when I was really young.
Yeah.
And I think anyone who's like into science fiction and sci-fi, you know, is probably along those lines. But yeah, I have my master's degree in marine affairs and policy with a focus on ocean conservation. I did that through University of Miami, and at the time was also interning at a PBS affiliate on a documentary series called The Changing Seas. So I developed this dual love at the same time for both like ocean conservation and science, along with film and media. And I'd had a previous career as a dance performer. So I was always a creative at heart. And ultimately, I got to a place in life where I just couldn't let go of this idea that there had to be some way I could be spread less thin, right? And yeah, like, how do I just take all these things that I love and make one cohesive body of work? So with the underwater activism photography I've been engaging in the last 2 years, that's sort of been the goal.
That's cool. So that's an example. I mean, and a lot of people don't connect those dots, right? A lot of people are just like, yeah, in my daytime, I love doing this. And then after hours, I do this. And they never try to put the peanut butter with the chocolate to make a Reese's, right?
Right.
Right.
Good metaphor.
I am the metaphor king. Yeah, but they end up living these disparate lives. Like, for example, in my case, I'm, you know, in corporate America, I was a marketing person, but then I love this podcasting stuff and photography. Synthesize it all together and you have, you know, Frederick 4.0. So that's really interesting. So I have a list of questions here that we have to go through. I got to make sure I get to these because I think you're probably the first person that I've interviewed that has this many deep facets, you know, that touch on my geeky side as well. So the goals for your work, you know, and what you're doing, you know, obviously, like if you have conservationalism in your title or in the way that you describe your work, as well as, you know, activist or artivist, or, you know, you have these sorts of causes in there. What does that mean exactly? And what is Christine Wren trying to do for and to the planet?
That's a great question. And I think if you had talked with me 2 years ago when I was just trying to figure out, like, how do I even start this, right? That's sort of that first question. And now I'm a little deeper and further along and into it. And what I'm really interested in is creating these bridges between people and the natural world through narrative and emotionally evocative imagery. So ocean conservation is a human issue, right? Like, all of the oxygen that's generated in our planet comes from phytoplankton in the sea, right? Like, we're losing these resources that are vital for human life. And I think there's just, because we're a land-based species, there's still just this disconnect between like this inherent, you know, actual connection between the humans and the planet. So a lot of the work that I'm trying to do is help people see those connections and be inspired to explore them more in their own lives. Yeah. I think one of the key drivers I found for action of anyone making a change in their life, whether that's like breaking a habit or making some big grand transformation, it's going to start with them actually feeling something, some deep, profound, powerful emotion, hope, awe, joy. And I think those types of stories are even more inherently powerful and transformative than the like fear mongering ones and the doom and gloom articles. So that's also a piece of the work in what I do, which seems different than some of the other environmental and conservationist stuff that I've, you know, seen out there, that rhetoric. There's ways of telling the story that's going to actually achieve the end goal that you're hoping people are going to learn and take. And then there's these other ways for you to frame a conversation that is just going to shut people down, and that I've been discouraged seeing so much of because it doesn't actually move us where we need to be.
Yeah. See, that you hit on a couple topics there. One of the main ones that's been a theme this year and before on This Week in Photo has been the idea of story. And myself and a lot of the other hosts have been encouraging people to, instead of just creating another pretty picture and, you know, creating some flawless, albeit work for the likes and for the adoration of social media, why not attach a story to it? Even if it's a fictional story, you know, attach a story to what you're building so that there's some sort of narrative with it. And then, you know, when I'm speaking with you, I'm hearing story as well, but there's a cause behind the story. It's not a fictional story. It's a real story. And you're using that real story to drive the creative side of your work. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that from like along my journey in particular, it's been like, why, like, ultimately you're just start exploring a craft and an art form, whether that's photography, dance, whatever, and you get to a certain level of proficiency in my mind, right? And then I think you start, it's a natural question that comes in everyone's mind. I've heard this from other photographers I speak to as well, like, well, like, why am I here with these creative superpowers that I have,
right?
Like, why? And the answer to that question, I think, is going to look different for every individual. But I can really only speak for myself, but I have heard from others as well that most of us feel the answer to that question isn't just to create something that sells, right? Create imagery that is technically correct or will be popular online. And making art for art's sake, like, and the world more beautiful is such an important and transformative thing to be engaging in, but also creating something that has an impact on people in a very specific way, or is intersected with something that the world actually needs. And typically you have to do that through the bridge of story. Like, that is how, right? That's how you get there to that end goal. But all of that process for me has integrated so much more like integrity, purpose, value, honor into my life, you know, that felt really missing before. So
yeah, it's interesting. It, you know, you, the whole story and the creating work with purpose and purposeful, I think that adds another dimension to you mentioned superpowers. It's funny you say that. I use that all the time. We have these creative superpowers, and most of us are like, you're Superman just flying around checking out the universe, you know, when you could be doing good works, right? And that brings up a good question I want to throw at you. And this doesn't have a correct answer to it, but you know, a lot of photography and art in general, people come at it from a countless number of directions, right? Some people are using it for catharsis. You know, I've spoken to photographers that are using photography as a way to get through hard parts of their lives, you know, which means, you know, if you like taking flowers and that makes taking pictures of flowers, that makes you feel better, take pictures of flowers, right? And then there are other people that they feel a social responsibility, like yourself, like, you know, I have this gift and I feel like I need to do something substantive with it to help the planet. Where should people, in your opinion, you know, and I'm going to show some of your work in a second, where should people sort of, how do you assess that, right? And like I said, this is not a yes, no question, but how do you assess whether you should be, even if you're using photography as catharsis, that you should be channeling that catharsis towards something positive? Like, say, for example, you know, you're struggling with substance abuse, and then you decide, yeah, I want to use photography to help me get through the substance abuse. Should you be doing photography to illustrate the challenges of conquering substance abuse, or should you just be shooting stuff to have fun shooting to take your mind off the substance? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And one of the things that actually stuck out to me when you were asking it is that little word that I just hate, which is should, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anytime I hear myself having that, like, you know, saying should, like, should I be doing that? I always feel like that's an indication that I'm somehow a little like off track,
yeah,
right? Like
obligation, yeah.
Right, that obligation piece is, I don't think really leads us to where we need to be. So like, I would say, do what you can with what you have where you are. That's kind of my framework for how I engage in the world and my work. And there's also this aspect of, you know, you need to be fitting your creative life into the container of a human life, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you're in that mode of like, I'm not eating anymore and I'm not doing well and my finances are terrible. Like you're still a human and you're still here, you know, and you've got to live in the real world. So those are sort of my two first steps that I'm thinking of when I'm next trying to plan out a million passion projects and like, what's my next, how am I going to show up as an activist in the world? Like always be taking care of you first. So I think if you put that in the center, and if someone's dealing with, I mean, I know people who've had like depression, eating disorders, like whatever it is. And that aspect of being able to use photography to either create self-portraits and share them online or share them with other people to help them see you in a way that you feel like you're not being seen. I think anything you can do to first heal yourself, right? It's that put your own oxygen mask on first, and then figure out how you're going to, and not even how you're going to like change the world. It's like, what feels the most authentic for you to show up in the world that in your life, in the times we currently live in.
I
so
love that. Yeah.
It's not like fix yourself. Like, and I say this because a piece of my journey had been, I was concerned about and really concerned about all of the issues that were happening with our environment and the ocean. And I spent like 10 years going through higher education and working in labs and trying to fit myself into a policy agency. And it was like, I was listening to all the voices that said, these are the roles that exist in the world for a change maker. And I just felt like I just kept trying to fit myself into one box. And if I would love to save as many people as possible from that, you know, having to go through that, because it doesn't work. You have to find out what is it that's, what are your own unique gifts and values, and how is that going to like manifest in the world as with something that the world needs, you know? Don't try and fit yourself into some box. Like, don't force it, I guess is what I'm saying.
You're like you're a tool in a toolbox with a very specific purpose, and you have to find, like, if you're a Phillips head screwdriver, you need to find, there's my metaphors again. You have to find the Phillips head screw that works with you, and then, you know, just go for it. Or that, and you see, you're in my head, Christine, because you used another metaphor that I use all the time with people, and that's, you know, if you're on a plane, they always tell you to put your oxygen mask on first before you try to help others, right? Because if you're passed out, you're useless, right? So and that fits for this as well. If your financial, emotional, physical well-being are compromised, you're less able to do the work, right? So you got to make sure that those bricks are in place first, and then you can, you know, kind of stretch your legs and stuff. Let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about your work, and I'm gonna bring up your website here, which is at it's at Christine. What's your URL, Christine?
It's theunderwaterwoman.com.
Oh, the Underwater Woman. Because I'm looking at ChristineWrenFilms.com. Where should I go?
Go to theunderwaterwoman.com.
Underwaterwoman.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
Been part of a little bit of a rebranding effort this year.
Cool. All right. I'm going to let that load in. So tell me about the whole idea of doing self-portraiture, right? And how you're, like, when I think of doing self-portraiture, I'm behind the camera all the time, right? Doing this kind of stuff. But it's not me, you know. First of all, I'm not aesthetically pleasing to be in front of the camera, right? but when I see work of people that can do this sort of stunning work, it's always amazing to me that you can concept this and then shoot it, you know, in one of the most challenging environments known to man, right? Underwater, and lighting and electricity, we know those in water don't really get along well. So tell me about that process and how all that goes.
You know, it's really interesting because I never really thought about it as self portraiture, you know. I felt but you're right. And there, for me, I had been carrying around these persistent, you know, images in a sketchbook, like concepts of translating ocean science or conservation issues through images. And ultimately I knew that starting off, I didn't have the skill sets to be the person behind the camera underwater with all the gear and taking it. And so it was just sort of a natural process of exploring, well, I've got these concepts and all of my really clear, you know, experience as an art director. And I know how to kind of build the costumes and help conceptualize these images. And now, okay, well, the next step is I'm going to have to find a really trustworthy underwater photographer that can shoot these type of images, conceptual underwater set images at like a caliber that I need. And so I found some of those people. Brett Stanley was the first one that I worked with that I, after years of trying on my own and trying in different ways and totally failing, but just sticking with it, that first campaign, Blind Spots, with pushing the plastic pollution, you know, shopping cart underwater with a blindfold, performed really well online. And that, you know, gave me the courage to keep going. And it just kind of felt natural for me to be the one who was in the water, because I mean, I didn't know anyone else who was gonna like subject themselves for free to like 8-hour days under, you know, in a pool and driving weird places. And there's so much prep time and physicality that goes into even being able to like execute these. And so it just was kind of a natural, like, well, I know I'm the only one that can do it. It'd be great if I found someone else, but
and that's so great. I mean, and I'm scrolling through some of these images now. They're fantastic. And I'm what comes to mind is, you know, especially knowing what your background is, you have a connection to the water, and now you're in the water. How does that feel to like to know that you're surrounded and immersed in this substance that you are now also photographing and going to share with the world? And you know, that's got to be a unique kind of feeling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you really nailed the, you know, hit the nail on the head there, because I was constantly trying to figure out, as I've talked, you know, with you before, how do I feel like show up as the most embodied change agent in the world? And anything I tried, I just didn't feel like embodied. And so that like physical, visceral immersion of me in the water in a capacity that feels very akin to my background in dance, it's just a feeling I can't even describe, you know, when something where every time I do an underwater shoot, I literally at the end of the day have the feeling that I could get hit by a bus or struck by lightning and I would just be totally happy and ready. Like I would really, it's the deepest sense of fulfillment. And I think a lot of, you know, it's worth it to stick it out and try and find whatever that is for you, for sure.
Absolutely. And then, you know, one of the questions that pops up, I'm looking at this shot with you underwater, the one you were just describing with the shopping cart and all the plastic and all that stuff. And, you know, the ocean conservationism kind of pops up because we know there's like an island of plastic floating in the Atlantic right now, right? At least, maybe there's more, but we know there's at least a huge island of plastic that no one has any idea of how to get rid of it and what to do with it, and it's impacting the environment. Is that what was going on in your mind when you were creating this shot?
Yeah, absolutely. That shot was really interesting because we shot two concepts that day with Brett Stanley, and the other one was Jellyfish Soup about overfishing. Mm-hmm. And the shopping cart one was one that like I was like, I don't know if we're gonna have time for that or whatever. Mm-hmm. But ultimately that one has been extremely popular, and what went through my head in that one was, how do I create like almost an image that's satirical? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So not only showing trash underwater, trash in the ocean, which we've seen and we know is there, but taking a scene that all of us go through in our daily life, which is just pushing a shopping cart down a grocery aisle, everyone can relate to that, and putting it, staging it in an underwater capacity, just kind of took both the source and the end problem and merged them together in a way that hadn't been done before. And having the person wear a blindfold, it really, in a single instant, anyone can look at that image and get that, wow, okay, this is an area that none of us are really paying attention to and seeing a blind spot in our life. Absolutely. So
you know what? I'm gonna ask you, just now that I have you on the hot seat here, I have to ask a question. You know, ocean conservationism. Put that hat on. Take the photography hat off. Put that hat on. You know, when I was reading about this, sort of the what we were talking about with the pollution in the ocean, all the plastic that's not, you know, biodegradable, it's just kind of be there for a while. I was thinking about that and how that's not going away. And I was thinking about, you know, sort of the global warming issue and how that's not really going away anytime soon. And then I was thinking about the issue of space garbage as well. So I don't know if you know about that. They're like, we're surrounded. The globe is actually surrounded. We're basically building our own ring system around the planet, you know, but in three dimensions of garbage that's floating around the planet, right? So we got garbage in outer space. We've got garbage in our oceans. We're killing the atmosphere. And then we've got the denial of certain entities that this is even happening, you know? So what, you know, from your standpoint, is there a light at the end of the tunnel, or should I just be happy that I was born so early? I won't have to deal with it in 10 years.
So. Oh my goodness. Yeah. That is the question, isn't it? I think ultimately, I myself personally get discouraged very often, particularly what we're seeing with our current U.S. administration, and wake up every day and there's some new aspect of the environment that is under onslaught and seems like we're sliding so far backwards. Ultimately, like, in my mind and what I've seen is no one can really know the future just yet, right? So, and I know that in order to get to that vision of an Earth and a planet where hopefully we live in some modicum of more harmony with each other and this planet, this one planet that we get on, I know that pieces of that are simply that, you know, we have to remain hopeful. I don't think that you see the solutions if you are walking through the earth and the world right now with this affect that there's no hope. So I guess I'd say I'm reluctantly optimistic. I see examples of human dignity and kindness almost every day in my daily life. And you get to choose what you orient to in your experience of life, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to look, maybe we have equally, you know, human kindness and human unkindness in a day, but which one do you want to pay more attention to, and which one's going to get us closer to where we want to go? Absolutely. So those are sort of the questions and how I frame it for myself right now. We have a lot of problems we've got to overcome, and it's definitely concerning for me. But like I said,
do you want to hear another analogy? I gotta give you another analogy.
Yeah, give me a metaphor.
Metaphor. Here's another metaphor. So when I think about this stuff, and I think about the sort of blindness that a lot of us, you know, humans have about what's happening to the environment and all that, I think about myself as a teenage kid when I got my first car. That was leaking, oil, right? So I had to literally keep putting oil in it, and it would just leak out over time, you know? And I didn't even think about what I was doing to the environment or anything, but I thought about it from the standpoint of, you know, whatever, that's just what I'm doing. That's just how this car works. I got a budget to go buy a couple of quarts of oil every time I get gas. put that in the car. And that's what it feels like, you know, that sort of denial. Or, you know, the idea of not changing the oil in your car, like, even though despite my dad and everyone else telling me you got to change your oil all the time or you're going to mess up the engine, it's going to be much more expensive to fix or replace the engine than a 69 cent can of oil or a $12 oil change. Right. But then it still wouldn't do it. You know, you just like, oh, car runs fine. I'm just going to keep driving until something happens. It kind of was what it feels like where we are as a species. We're driving that car. We're not changing the oil. We're just in denial about something that's going to happen. And then the scary part is something is going to happen. And then you're going to be like, wow, if I had just changed the oil in that car, I wouldn't be replacing. I wouldn't have to colonize Mars.
So. No, it's very true. I mean, you hit on something that, I mean, historically we see so often, which is like, until something happens, until the catastrophe strikes, it doesn't really become our reality, right? Because it's still right now. Even if we have the projections from the climate, you know, scientists, it still seems like it's not what we're facing in our day to day, even though we are. Yeah. It's still future. But
it's easy to ignore right now, right?
If you're really sleeping, I feel like it's easy to ignore.
You're like, hey, it's not affecting my hamster wheel. Why should I even care?
Right.
My hamster wheel spins just fine. That's your problem.
And this comes to the place where imagery can step in and have such a powerful effect, right?
Yeah.
Because this is the place where you can create visuals that evoke emotions of unity and connectedness, right? Think about, like, I always think about the image of the moon, like our first moon, like when we landed on the moon and we have that first image from the sky of Earth, right? And it's like the whole universe, the entire planet somehow suddenly was like galvanized to believe, like, whoa, oh my gosh, in a new way, we're all on this like little planet Earth ship together.
This little rock
right,
flying around
in space. So that's why, like I said, I'm so glad we're talking about this, and so many photographers are out there with these incredible creative superpowers that can be a huge part of the solution right now.
I love it. Well, let's switch gears again and talk about these workshops that you're doing. So you're showing people how to do this kind of amazing underwater photography that you're doing. Can you take me through that? How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been really interested in figuring out how do I magnify my impact, right? Like, there's really only one of me. And if we can teach and inspire more photographers and scuba divers particularly to use and harness photography in the way of like creating underwater narratives and concepts for ocean conservation the way that I'm currently doing, then you have, you know, this entire network around the globe of people who are creating imagery with impact. So some of these, the workshops that I'm starting to lead, which will be up on the website mm-hmm. under the workshop section, are immersive travel experiences where I partner with a really talented underwater photographer and we lead a group of scuba divers with the proper equipment to a destination in the world and craft this really detailed curriculum related to storytelling, conservation ethics, and just on the ground experience in lots of different locations. You can build up the image, the portfolio that you need of imagery to get started in this.
I love it. I'm on the page, one of the pages now for one of the workshops, the Koh Tao workshop. That's September 17th to 21st. That one's coming up, right?
That one is. That one's pretty full right now, and that's actually slightly different than the underwater photography workshops we're doing. Mm-hmm. This one in particular, I partnered up with another underwater performer who's also a free diver. So that workshop is geared for the people who are our models, are, you know, free divers and looking to figure out how do I take my underwater movement and breath skills to that next elevated level. So I'm ultimately partnering with a lot of different underwater artists to create workshops and offerings right now, which is really exciting.
That is really cool. I love that. I love the partnership idea of joining forces instead of, hey, here's one photographer. I got a gaggle of people around me. I'm going to teach you what I know. And, you know, okay, sayonara, back on the plane kind of thing, you know, sort of gavel, having different perspectives on a given problem or scene, you know, is gives you multiple dimensions, right? So that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Absolutely. There's, I think that piece has become, I've seen so many times over and again, like the co-creation mm-hmm. idea. And not only does that, I think, yield better solutions and, it is also ensures that, I mean, for myself personally, and I think anyone else who's ever engaged in any kind of philanthropic or activism endeavors, it can be exhausting, yeah. Especially if you feel like you're the only one who's doing this, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Because we're talking about how so many people are very disconnected and distanced from it. And in order to like survive and for your own mental sanity and to be able to, I think, to produce more work with less stress and exhaustion, you need to have good groups of people around you. You need to find the ways to partner with others that are going to help lift you up when, you know, you're feeling tired.
I love it. That's good life advice too, you know.
Yeah, right.
So, let's wrap this up. What's next for Christine Wren? What's on your, you know, both on your long term, this is what I want to do, and you know, the next trip or the next project that you're working on.
Yeah, well, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to have another underwater imagery campaign coming out again with Brett Stanley, which is really cool because it's been about 2 years since we first put out the first work. It's related to coral bleaching. We did this incredible body painting with Lanochromium, and so it's just some of the most beautiful imagery I've seen. So that's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks. I'm going to continue to make more underwater conservation imagery campaigns and hopefully do more workshops. The next one that's coming up underwater destination workshop will be in the Maldives in November with nice. Chiara Salamoni, really amazing underwater photographer. So that's what's on the schedule for me right now.
Very cool. Well, give me links to all that, and I'll list it. I'll list them in the description for this video on YouTube, and as well as in the blog post, so people can just click right over and sign up if they want to. Well, cool. Christine Wren, thank you so much. Fascinating conversation. I could talk to you for hours, obviously. Yeah, we haven't even explored aliens in the ocean. Or
I know. We didn't get there.
I was watching this documentary yesterday, I think it was. I forget what the name of it was. It's on. It's either on Netflix or Hulu. But they were just showing. It was on bioluminescence and just deep sea creatures and the variety of life down there and how we're just still every day finding new creatures down there. And I'm looking at some of these creatures. I'm like, there is no way that I'm on the same evolutionary tree as that thing. There's no way.
It's mind-boggling. Yeah, some of that, I mean, really aliens living at the bottom of our ocean. It's just like, deep sea stuff is crazy.
Like things that you can't even write, like a chain, you know, a half a mile long that is one organism, you know, of lights, you know, it's like Christmas tree lights and that's alive, you know, it's crazy. So I envy you. I was listening to, I think if I remember, I'll link to this comedy skit from comedian Bill Burr. Have you heard of Bill Burr?
I have.
Yeah, so have you heard his skit on why he hates the ocean?
Oh, no, I haven't.
I'll send it to you. And yeah. He's got valid points. He's just talking about how everything in there can kill you and why would you want to go in there? He was like, it's like going into a bad neighborhood blindfolded with no gun. Right? No kind of defenses. You go into a bad neighborhood and then expect everything to be okay when everything is designed to do you harm, right?
Might be a little bit true, maybe. Little bit.
Yeah. No, I'll link to it in this post, and also I'm going to send it to you right after this. So this is cool.
Good. Excellent.
All right.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been great talking with you.
You're welcome, Christine. Thank you. We'll see you. We'll see you next time.
This is Twip.